Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Chav Bet, Amud Bet, three lines from the bottom. It's a story about Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa. Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa, Rashi over here mentions Hindoa, Me'eretz Kushi, because Kush, the Targum of Kush, is Hindoa, which would be associated with the Ethiopia. Obviously, those that also suggest possibly that it was associated with something a little further away, whether that's India, but he was clearly not a local. Ger Shein Lo Yoshim, a convert, a Ger Tzedek, had no inheritors. That means that he didn't have children after he already converted, so he has no inheritors. Habachalosh, he was weak, he was sick, but sick in the sense that he was on his deathbed. Al Marzutra Lushulebei, Marzutra went to see how he was doing, to visit him. Chazid Tavkifle Al Matuva, he saw that he was on the precipice of passing away. Amalei L'Avdei Shlofli Misanai, take off my shoes, v'amtinu lebeita, and then take them back to my house. Ika de amre. So what was going on here? Now it's clear that in the context of what we've been discussing until now, that one of the ways to establish ownership over an eved is chazaka. And the Gemara here discusses what is a chazaka. A chazaka is that you have him do work that is associated with a slave, or acting like a slave. Taking his shoes off and then carrying them home is demonstrating ownership, or demonstrating that you're the owner and he is a slave. So he did this on the precipice while Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa was passing away, in order to ensure that the Eved was engaged in work when Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa passed away. So now there are two versions of this. Igad Amre, Gadol Hava, that he was of age. Zeperish the Mita, Zeperish the Chaim. Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa passed away. Marzutra stayed alive, meaning that the ownership passed directly from Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa, the Ger, to Marzutra directly. V'igadamre, some say, katan avo, that the slave was a minor. Utoloke abo sha'ul. And this is the girsa of Rashi, as you can already see in the Masorah Hashas. There is an opposing girsa which Tosafot takes up. We'll start here with Rashi's girsa, which is, this is not like abo sha'ul, the Tanya. Girshemate, a Ger that passes away, ubizbizu Yisrael nechasav. And the Israelim came to plunder his possessions, meaning that there were no inheritors, so it all became hefker, and everybody's coming to take what they can. Bayubahen abadim, and there were slaves amongst his possessions. Ben gedolim, ben ktanim, whether they are of age or minors, kanu atzman b'nei chorin, they are the first ones to take possession of themselves, since they are first in line, the first to take possession. They therefore inherit themselves, or basically win their freedom because of that. Abishol Omer, Gedolim Kanu Atzman B'nei Chorin, those that are of age acquire themselves. Ketanim Kol Machzik Behem Zachah Behem. The other hand, for Ketanim, whoever comes first can take possession of them. The difference being that Gedolim have the ability to acquire, have the ability to make a kinyan, so they take possession of themselves. On the other hand, Ketanim, according to Abishol, don't have that ability, so therefore they're left in limbo until someone takes possession of them, but they can't take possession of themselves. So we wait until the first person who takes possession of them. So the way that you have the two explanations here, according to Rashi, is some people say that he was a gadol, and his ability of Marzutra to take possession of him is because he never allowed him to go into his own possession. By having him do the work for him immediately, that means while he's passing away, there was never a transition time where he gained independence. Immediately upon the death of Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa, Marzutra took possession of him. There is no interim stage in which he's able to take possession of himself. The point was that he had him get engaged as he's passing away. That's why he sent them home. Didn't say, just take my shoes off. He said, take my shoes off and take them to my house. So he knew he had sufficient time for him to pass away in the interim. That's the first lashon. The second lashon is that we're speaking about a katan, and not like Abba Shaul. Because according to Abba Shaul, a katan, you don't need to demonstrate ownership over a katan, because a katan cannot acquire himself. Since he can't acquire himself, then he didn't have to do this process by which he kept him as a slave straight through from the death of Rabbi Yehuda Hindoa into the hands of Marzutra. Even if Marzutra did it afterwards, he would have been successful at acquiring the katan, because Katan can't acquire himself. So it's not like Abba Shaul. It's like the Chachamim who say that a Katan can acquire himself. And for the same reason then, the same methodology, which is that he held him as a slave without any transition time. It went directly from Rabbi Yehuda in Doha into Marzutra's hand, even though he's a katan, which is like the Shita of the Chachamim. So now that is Rashi's Girsa, which says it's the Loka Abba Shaul. It's not like Abba Shaul. On the other hand, you can see here in the Masorah Shas brings from the Rif, the Rosh, and Tosafot himself says, Rabbeinu Tam says that the Girsa here was Udike Abba Shaul, that it was like the position of Abba Shaul and not against the position of Abba Shaul. And here are the questions that they ask on Rashi. First one, Kashla Rabbeinu Tam. Minale Deloka Abba Shaul. According to Rashi, how do you know it's not like Abba Shaul? Dilma, Lomala, Emelecha, Ke Abba Shaul. Maybe it's like Abba Shaul. And then Tzvirle. So then why did he send him home with the stuff and make him work straight through the death of his master? Because Shema Yikad Menu Acher. He wanted to be the first one to take possession of him. I mean, that he wasn't afraid of the slave taking possession of himself. He's afraid of another Yisrael taking possession of the slave. So by doing this, he prevented anyone else from taking possession of the slave. So you could come up with a reason why, even though you hold like Abba Shaul and you didn't have to do it immediately, you could have done it at a later time, nevertheless, you did it first because you wanted to be first. You didn't want anybody else to take him. That's the first question. The second question he brings is from the Gemara in Gittin, where the machloki between Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi and Rabbi Yochanan, and in that machloket, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi holds like Abba Shaul. And we paskin like Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi over Rabbi Yochanan. That means the locha is like Abba Shaul. So why would the Gemara go out of its way to set up a sugya, the locha Abba Shaul, if the locha is like Abba Shaul? And for that reason, the Rabbeinu Tam favors the girsa, so that the Rifaz and others have that the Gemara here is ke Abba Shaul, is like Abba Shaul. And then, this is the explanation of the Gemara. In the case of Gadol, nothing changes because it's all the same. I mean, by Gadol, then he takes possession of him because he doesn't want to take possession of himself. Now, in the second case, it's a case of a katan, and it's Abba Shaul. According to Abba Shaul, that means that he can wait to take possession of him. The katan cannot take possession of himself. But now, the question that he asked on Rashi becomes the answer, which is that, so the reason he did it is exactly the question he asked on Rashi, which is, he didn't want anybody else to take possession of the katan. So he says, V'od mefarish Rabbeinu Tam b'inyan acher, Igad Amri katan avi, shemaya gadol le'a molil bo. Says that the Igad Amri is saying that by a gadol this doesn't help. V'af alpi shebabdut acherim alav kodem hulivs kot ba'atzmo. Even if Marzutra is exercising this work on him, you still can't avoid the fact that he goes through a transition. I mean, theoretically, Rabbi Yehuda in Doha owns him. He passes away. Marzutra is already exercising a certain amount of ownership over him by demanding he takes his shoes. But what ended up happening is that he moves. The first person that he bumps into is himself. And no matter what Marzutra does, he can't change that fact. And so therefore, according to the Igad Amri, by a gadol, it would not work. That's why they switched. The Igad Amri says it only works by a katan and not by a gadol. Because what Marzutra does but did by a gadol doesn't work. It's only because of Abba Shaul by a katan that it does work. Where a katan cannot take possession of himself, that's the only reason why it works over here. But had it been a gadol, the gadol has sufficient rights and ability to take possession of himself no matter what you do to him. Alavara bonon, ben gadol ben katan, afilo avdut acherim alav kanat smo ben chorin. That implies that if you don't hold like Abba Shaul, according to the Chachamim, there's no difference between a gadol and a katan, and they automatically take possession of themselves, even if you're imposing your, quote-unquote, ba'alut or adunut on them, it doesn't do anything, because they are the first persons to bump into themselves, and they take possession of themselves. V'ri mifarish. And now the Ri takes the Rabbeinu Tam one step further and says, da'ad kamar uch Abba Shaul. Now when we say that the girsa that we're proposing here, which is that it's like Abba Shaul, Damilto kama nami koi. It's going on both lishonot. Vafido lishne kama. The gadol ava loaita chazaka moelet klum eladavka le Abba Shaul. That the chazaka only works according to Abba Shaul. So what the Reed does is takes the Rabbeinu Tam and says, wait a minute. Rabbeinu Tam says here, the ikadami that says he was a katan says it wouldn't have worked by a gadol. But the Reed says is no, it would have worked by a gadol, but you still need Abba Shaul to make it work by a gadol. And that has to do with the difference of the reasoning behind the positions that are Rabbanan and Abba Shaul. The Tamayu the Rabbanon, the Gomer Lo Lo Misha, because they learn out a Gzeir Shabba from an Isha. Maisha mitat bal materet below get. And just like the death of the husband releases the woman without any get, Av Eved Mishtalech below get. So too an Eved can be sent free without any get, Shichrur over here. And therefore the mitat abal is the equivalent of a get, and the same thing by an eved. The mitzat adon is the equivalent of a get shichur, and when you get a get shichur, nobody else has rights to enter into the fray at all. He gains his freedom. Nobody can step in and say, oh, I got you first, because a get shichur is, by definition, a freedom. If that's the case, then for the Rabbanon, there's no way that you could ever exercise a right before the individual themselves exercises that right. So the Gadol and the Katan would have won their freedom, and you can't impose on them. Aval Abba Shaul, but according to Abba Shaul, who says that the limud from an Isha is, Ma'isha Yisura Mafkat Bebita Tabau, Velo Mamona, that what is released from the death of the husband is not like what the Rabbanon are describing, it's equivalent of a get, it's rather just the Isur dissipates, which is, now the monetary side of it is still in effect. Or, in other words, someone could exert ownership over these slaves, even a gadol. And by giving in to the word of Marzutra, he was demonstrating his willingness to subjugate himself to Marzutra. Therefore he has the same din as a katan. But what you said is true then. Had he refused to do it, he would have been able to acquire himself. And so that's the difference. Therefore, what does it mean? Alibad Abashol. Alibad Abashol says here that since a katan doesn't have dat, or that lack of dat means that he can't exercise his monetary rights over here, that's why someone else can possess it. A gadol who agrees to be subjugated is doing the same thing as a katan. He is not exercising his monetary rights. Since he doesn't exercise his monetary rights, you can acquire him. According to the Rabbanan, that has not any meaning, because by definition, just like when you get a get shichrur, it doesn't matter whether he wants the monetary rights or not, it comes automatically to him. That's an automatic outcome of the get shichrur. According to Rabbanan, whether you're a gadol or a katan, someone else cannot acquire them. On the other hand, for Abba Shaul, where he says it's din by a katan, will also allow the gadol to end up in that same position, where he agrees to do the work, and which is what happened here. So that's the reason, we'll call it enhanced explanation, according to this shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, that ki Abba Shaul, that the Gemara here is like Abba Shaul, applies to both instances, both when he's a gadol and when he is a katan. Right now, the next Gemara. Gemara says, based on the Mishnah, mekoneh atzmo b'kesef, that the Eved has the ability to acquire himself through kesef, but the Mishnah says, ayidei achirim, that kesef by other parties, and then we had an shtar ayidei atzmo, and with a shtar with his own hand, that was divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chamim amrim, b'kesef ayidei atzmo, uv'shtar ayidei achirim, uvajei akesef shel achirim. So you have here a machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in the Mishnah. B'kesef ayidei achirim in, avalo yidei atzmo. The way that Rabbi Meir expresses it is that other people's money can do this, but his own money can't do this. But my askinan, what exactly is the scenario? Ilei mashalomi dato, if you do not have the permission or acquiescence of the slave, michtei, shmanelei the Rabbi Meir, you might remember this from Gitin, we had a machloket very early on in Gitin between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, about whether it is a zchut for a woman to be divorced, and is it a zchut for an eved to be freed. So now, Rabbi Meir's opinion there was, damaru chovu le'eved sheyetzemi yad rabo lecherut. He believed that it was to the detriment of a slave to be freed. If he is an Eved Kna'ani, he has the ability, if he's working for a Kohen, to eat Shuma. If you free him, he loses that right to eat Shuma. That's to his detriment. If he's working for Israel, he's Mutar B'Shifcha Kna'anit, which Rabbi Meir feels are more available and more Prutzim, and therefore he desires that life. In that case, it's a chol for him to be free. And what does that mean? That means that we are zochin l'adam shelo b'fanav, but ain chavim l'adam shelo b'fanav. You can do something to the benefit of another party, even without their knowledge or without their acquiescence. But if it's to their detriment, they must agree to it, otherwise it doesn't work. Over here, where the freedom is going to result in a detriment to him, shalomi dato, if he doesn't know about it, how can you pay money to free him and release him if it's to his detriment? He has to agree to this. Ritanina. Zochin adam shelo b'fanav. You again merit, mean that you can do something to the benefit of a party, even if that party is not a party to it. I mean, they don't have the knowledge or they do not aware of the fact because it's to their benefit. Ain chavin lo elo b'fanav. But when you want to obligate them, they have to be a party to the situation because you can't obligate someone without their permission. Meaning that either they make you into an agent to obligate them, or they have to be a party to the agreement. Elo pshita midato. So the scenario here has to be that the slave is aware of what's going on, and he agrees. V'haka mashmalan. And therefore Rabbi Meir is teaching us, ayidei acherimin, ayidei atzmo lo. That when he does it by himself, obviously it's not going to work, we'll see in 1 second why, but ayidei acherim, it will work because he's a party to this. He's okay with someone else paying money and having him be free. So even though it may be to his detriment, he agrees to this detrimental outcome because he wants to go free. He prefers the freedom to the other rights. Alma ain kinyan eved below rabo. The conclusion you have from this in Rabbi Meir's Shita is that an eved has no independent rights from his master. That means whatever mashukana eved, kana rabo, to the utmost extent. Which means that you can never gift something to an eved without his master getting control over that. That's why it has to be done. Ayidei acherim. The person goes directly to the adon, pays the adon for his freedom, does not go through the slave. That's exactly what Rabbi Meir is suggesting, what the Gemara is saying here. First of all, he has to be a party to it, because then it is, even though it's a chovah, he agrees to it. Someone else is acting on his behalf, paying money to the adon to free him. So he has to be aware of that, because it's a detriment for him to be freed. And since that guy is not his shaliach, he's not an emissary of the slave, say that I prefer to be free than I prefer to be enslaved. That's all he has to do here. He's not giving permission in the sense of him banging out. He just agrees that when he pays the money, he's willing to go free by that. Therefore, when he goes and acts, he's acting independent of the slave. Without the slave's permission, he can't do that because winning freedom is not necessarily a zchut, it's a chovah. And so he's okay with this guy doing that. Ihochi. That's the case, ema seifa. What are you going to do with the latter half of the Mishnah in Rabbi Meir's position, which is bishtar ayidei atzmo, ayidei mitzmo in ayidei acherim lo? So wait a minute. In the second part of Rabbi Meir's statement, he says that a slave can acquire his freedom through acceptance of a shtar shichrur, a document of emancipation. But you just told me that a slave has no ability to acquire by himself. And number two is, it's a chovah, that it's something that's to his detriment. So now, if you're saying that the Mishnah is discussing a case of midato, where he knows about it, then why shouldn't they shtar shechur from someone else help out over here? If the adon gives the shtar shechur to another party to accept on behalf of the slave, why doesn't it work? He knows about it. He agrees to it. Why doesn't it work? Vi midato, ayidei acherim, amaylo. So why is it when you give it to another party, it doesn't work? The slave, you say, here, take this on behalf of the slave so that he goes free. The slave knows about it, and he wants to go free. And so therefore, why isn't the acceptance of the other party work over here? Why does Rabbi Meir say nobody can accept it on his behalf? So what are you going to explain the Mishnah when it says that he can take it by himself? It means also by himself. And this teaches us the reason that it works by himself, or why the Mishnah mentions himself, is to teach you that even though normally an Eved Kenani has no rights of ownership independent of his master, over here, simultaneously they happen. As we discussed in Kitin many times, that when he receives the get, his freedom and his ability to accept the get happen simultaneously, and therefore he's able to win his freedom by accepting the document of emancipation. So that's why the Mishnah emphasized the Atzmo, to teach you not only can Acherim do it, but even he himself can do it. V'alo tani hochi. The only problem is that we have a braita that says the opposite. What you're suggesting now within the sheet of Rabbi Meir is, when you use kesef, then only acherim can do it. Because he can't have any ownership, he has no ownership independent of his master, so it doesn't work with his own money or giving him money. Other people can do it as long as he is in agreement or on board with it. And so therefore, acherim can do it, but he can't do it. When it comes to a shtar, both he himself can do it, and acherim can do it, midato. So then why did the Mishnah, when it's quoted Rabbi Meir's position, say, atzmo? Why did it sounds like atzmo and not acherim? The answer is no. It means af atzmo. Not only can others do it for accept the get shichur for him, he can even accept it for himself. Why? Because gito biyado v'im kechad. That's our suggestion as to the position of Rabbi Meir right now. The Gemara says that doesn't work because we have a braita that states otherwise, that Rabbi Meir's position is different. Rabbi Meir makes it clear that shtar only works with him and not with someone else. Well, the problem with that is we just established that the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Meir, is speaking about a case of midato, where the slave agrees and wants to go free. So then why is the acceptance of the get shechur, the document of emancipation by a third party, not help the slave over here? So Amar Abayi, the olam shalom midato. The case here is that the slave is not aware of what's going on. He's not a party to this transaction at all. V'shani kesef. Honu v'koni le bal korcho, makni le bal korcho. Very interesting thesis, which is, just like monies acquire a slave without his permission, you don't need a slave's permission to be acquired. Unless, of course, it's the first step where he's enslaving himself for the first time. Of course, you would need his permission there. But in cases where you're selling a slave from party to party, you don't need the slave's acquiescence for that. I mean that he doesn't have any say in the trade because he's property. And property can be traded from two parties. The object of the trade has no say in the matter. So the slave has no say in the matter. When you sell the slave to another party, the acquiring party acquires him, whether or not the slave wants that or doesn't want that. He doesn't have a choice in the matter. So what Abaye says is, well, kesef works as a vehicle of acquisition. It also works as a vehicle of release. And just like when you acquire, it can be done without the slave's permission, so too with the release, it can be done without the slave's permission. Gemara says, Ihochi, shtar nami. If that's the case, shtar should do the same thing. Because just like he can be acquired through a shtar without permission, it should release him with the shtar without his permission. And why are we saying over here that shtar yadei achirim doesn't work? It should work on yadei achirim because he has no say in the matter. Hai shtar lachud? Hai shtar lachud, if you remember, we saw this earlier in the Masechta with regards to why are kesef and shtar different. That is because the shtar knisa and the shtar shichrur are totally different documents. Yeah, they're both called shtarot, they're both documents, but the contents of the document are completely different. A document of acquisition and a document of release are totally different documents. So it's one thing to acquire without the permission of the slave. It's another thing to release him without his permission because those are two different documents. Just because you can acquire him doesn't mean you can release him without his permission, especially according to Rabbi Meir, who says that it's a chovat. It's to his detriment. So hachanami, hai kasva l'chud, hai kasva l'chud. Why don't you say the same thing by money? Monies of acquisition are different than monies of release. The Gemara's answer is similar to what it said earlier in the Masechta. Tiva miyachad hu. There's nothing in the money itself that distinguishes it. Meaning that money is money. Doesn't matter if it's used as an acquisition vehicle, as a release vehicle. In both cases, the money is fungible. I mean, it doesn't look any different. It doesn't act any differently. Now, true, you're trying to accomplish something different with it, but the money itself is the same. And therefore, if I can acquire Baal Korche with money, I can release him Baal Korche with money. Shtar, where the document is completely different, you can't make that parallel. You can't say just because that I can acquire with the shtar against his will, I can release him against his will. Because you're dealing with two different shtarot completely. You can't say just because one works, the other one works. They're not the same document. They're a completely different document. So that's Abaye's answer to the question about Rabbi Meir Shita. And that means Rabbi Meir Shita, as far as we are concerned, is, number one, by kesef, he can only do it ayyidei achirim, because he has no independent ownership. And ayyidei achirim can even be done shelo midato, because just like he's acquired Baal Korche, he can be traded Baal Korche, he can be released Baal Korche with kesef. Shtar only works ayyidei atzmo, not ayyidei achirim. Ayyidei atzmo because gito v'yado ba'im ke'echad, therefore he can acquire himself through the acceptance of the get of get shechur, the document of emancipation, and his yad and his freedom come simultaneously. Ayyidei achirim cannot be done because it's Baal Korcho. It's Shalomi Dato. He doesn't know about this. And since it's a chovah, since it's to his detriment, without his permission, you can't have him freed with the Get Shechur, giving it to a third party on his behalf. Now, of course, if it is Midato, if he does want it, then that might work. But that's not the case of Rabbi Meir speaking about. Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah speaking a case, Shalomi Dato. Now, just as an aside, you can't say Kesef V'yado Ba'im Ke'achat, because they function differently. Gito v'yado ba'im ke'achad is because the Eved himself is the recipient of the get. And then again, when you say kesef v'yado ba'im ke'achad, the recipient of the kesef is the adon. So it's much harder. You can't make that claim of kesef v'yado ba'im ke'achad because it's working with two independent parties. The kesef is going to the adon and the yad is coming to the Eved. So therefore that concept is not applicable by kesef like it is applicable by a get. That's Rabbi's answer. Roba amar, kesef, kabbalat rabo garmalo, shtar, kabbalat achirim garmalo. Rabba makes an important distinction that answers all of these issues, but explains why it works, which is that even in the case of kesef, the reason that kesef works ayyidei achirim is not because of what Abaye says over here, that it works baal korche, it works against his will, but rather he's not a party to the transaction. When you want to buy the freedom of a slave, you're not paying him to go free. You're paying his master who has those rights. The master is the one who makes the decision whether he lets him go or doesn't let him go. If you pay off the master and the master releases him, the eved has no say in that matter. The ownership is the master's ownership. So if he accepts money to free the slave, then he's been compensated for the property. He can do as he pleases with that property. The slave has no say in that matter. And so therefore, what ends up happening is that the master is not a shliach or representative of the slave, but rather he's acting on his own behalf, out of his own interests, which is that he has ownership here. He sold those interests. Whether he sells those interests to another party or he gives them back to the slave, that's his decision. That's he can do whatever he pleases. And so that's what Rashi says over here. It's not the other parties that are causing him to be acquired and then to his detriment. The Rav is acting out of his own interest, nothing to do with the slave, and that's why it works. The money works. Not because he can be released to Baal Kroche, which happens to be true, but it's not because Kesef has this power to release him against his will, but rather, the Kesef has nothing to do with him. He's not a party to the transaction, and the Adon can make his own decision, and his own decision is for his own benefit. He makes his decision. Whether that's the detriment of the slave or not, it doesn't matter because the slave's not a party to this transaction. And so the Baali make it, and that's his explanation now. Why does Kesef work on Yidei Acherim and not on Yidei Atzmo? Yidei Atzmo doesn't work because he doesn't have any rights of ownership, the slave. So whatever he acquires will go to his Adon. He doesn't have any money. If it's someone else buying him out, the reason it works is because the master is transacting with another party. He's not a agent of the slave. He has nothing to do with the slave. It's his rights. He can do whatever he wants. He wants to sell his field. He wants to make his field hefker. He can do as he pleases. That's the same thing with regards to the slave. With the shtar, you need gito v'yado ba'im kechad. That works when it's the slave himself. When it's someone else, it's to his detriment. And if it's to his detriment, without the acquiescence of the slave, someone else cannot be his shaliach to accept the get shichur, unless he appoints him or he tells him that I want him to accept it. And that's Robo's explanation of Rabbi Meir. Okay, now we move on to the Chachamim's position. Chachamim Armim, b'kesef ayidei atzmo. That by kesef, he can acquire himself through his own kesef. B'kesef ayidei atzmo in ayidei acherim lo, am I? Why is he able to acquire when the money is his, but not when the money belongs to someone else? Nehi nami shelo midato, even if it's not with the acquiescence of the slave, he has no idea this is going on. Michtei, shamino loho derabonon da'amrei. We know that the Rabbanon argue on Rabbi Meir. Whereas Rabbi Meir's position was that it is to the detriment of the slave when he is freed. According to the Chachamim, this is the other side of the position, the one that you like better, which is, wouldn't he rather have his freedom than the Truma? Wouldn't he rather have his freedom than the Shivka Kananit? That's the Rabbanon's position. Freedom is worth the most. And therefore, it is a schut for a slave to be released. That means, zuchutu sheyetzei mitachat yad rabo lecherut, since it is a benefit for him to be released, it's the best outcome for him. You can act on behalf of another party and be, in essence, his shliach. The way that the Rishonim formulated it when we learned this in Kitin is either anan sade. We see that he would want you to be a shliach. You become an agent because we assume that that's what he would want, because everybody would want that. If you're about to do something to the benefit of a party, it's the equivalent of you being made into a shliach. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that you become a yad, you become an extension of that party, and you can acquire on his behalf. You don't need his permission because to his benefit, everything is an extension of that party. So in that way, you can acquire on his behalf. So over here too, why can't you say, if it's a schut for him to be released, why does it matter whether it's his money or someone else paying? If he pays, okay, we know he knows about it. But when it comes to a case where someone else is paying, even if he doesn't know about it, we should let the transaction go through because it's to his benefit. So what are you going to suggest now? Ayidei atzmo of the Chachamim means not only others can buy his freedom, but af ayidei atzmo, and that not only can others buy his freedom, but even he can buy his freedom. V'kamash malan. And then the conclusion we would have from this is, or why did it write ayidei atzmo? Deish kiyan the eved below rabo. That's the chiddush here that you learn from the Chachamim's position. Is that an eved has the ability to have independent ownership from his master. Not in all cases, but at least in certain amount of cases, if it's granted to him the gift without his master getting rights, to the exclusion of the rights of his master, that he could have ownership. So maybe that's a nice explanation of the Chachamim's definition. Iochi, Ema Seifa. What are you going to do with the next line in the Mishnah? The Mishnah says, B'shtar, Ayodei Acharim, V'lo Ayodei Atzmo. When it comes to a shtar, he can acquire only through third parties, but not by himself. V'ha Kaimelon. The way Rashi translates V'ha Kaimelon over here, Klomar V'ha Masim B'chol Yom. This is something that's a daily occurrence. And we know that this is absolutely true. We don't have to go and find evidence. This is that Gito V'yado Ba'im Ke'echad. Everybody agrees that he can acquire himself through a get shichrur because his emancipation and his ability to acquire come simultaneously. So therefore, in that second half, why would you think that ayidei acharim below ayidei atzmo? So where it says, v'chitei mama ayidei acharim, af ayidei acharim. So what are you going to do? Suggest what we just did, which is that acharim means even with other people. V'akamashvulon. T'zchutu le'evit, she'etzei miyad rabo le'cherut. And what would be the conclusion here? That it's a merit to this individual to be released. Because you can't say that first part of the Mishnah says ayidei atzmo, and we're saying ayidei atzmo means af ayidei atzmo. Then you're going to come and say the second part of the Mishnah says ayidei acharim means also af ayidei acharim, also ayidei acharim. Doesn't seem to work so well in the Mishnah, that every time you say something, it doesn't really mean what you say, it means also. And therefore, that means that the Chachamim allow anything to happen. Yehochi, narvinu, v'nitnuhu. Then the easy solution to the problem would be to put the two of them together. Why would you separate them in the Mishnah between Kesef and Shtar if Kesef and Shtar do exactly the same thing, which is Kesef works Ayidei Atzmo and Ayidei Acharim, and Shtar works Ayidei Atzmo Ayidei Acharim. The simplest way to write that would be both Shtar and Kesef work Ayidei Atzmo and Ayidei Acharim. Say that. B'Kesef B'Shtar Ben Ayidei Acharim Ben Ayidei Atzmo. So what you have to say now is that cannot be the reading of the Mishnah, because otherwise the Rishta would have had a simpler way to combine the issues and make them into one issue. The truth is that that is not so obvious, and in the conclusion of the Gemara, you might have been able to differentiate. Even if you want to say that it works, Ayidei Atzmo, Ayidei Acharim, it might be that there are differences between Shtar and Kesef. That the din of Baal Korcho might be different by Kesef and by Shtar, where the Eved might have the right to reject it when it comes to Baal Korcho, with regards to a shtar, they may not be able to do that with kesef. So that you'd have to say this in a looser fashion, that the din is the same, shalom idato. When he's not a party, he's not aware of what's going on. But if you wanted to say that, that would have been the easiest way to do it in the Mishnah. So now the answer of the Gemara is, okay, so Ella, what we have to say here is, bekesef ben ayidei acharim ben ayidei atzmo. That when it comes to kesef, it works ayidei acharim, and it works ayidei atzmo. Ayidei Acharim, because it's Zuchutu, though. So someone else can pay money and have him be free. Ayidei Atzmo, because the Eved has the ability to have a certain amount of independent ownership of his master. Bishtar, Ayidei Acharim, it works, because it's a Zuchut for him to be released. Below Ayidei Atzmo. But for him, himself, it doesn't work. Wait a minute, how can it not work? We just said, Gito V'yado Ba'im Ke'echad is a well-accepted normative halacha. Why shouldn't it work? The answer is, it's Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who, that position is authored by Rabbi Shimon Elazar, the Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Af Shtar Ayidei Acharim, Velo Ayidei Atzmo. Rabbi Shimon Elazar believes, or is of that opinion, that you don't have Gito V'yado Ba'im Ke'echad. And therefore Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, even by Shtar, you could do Ayidei Acharim, Velo Ayidei Atzmo. You can do it through third parties, because it's a schut for him, but he himself cannot acquire the get or receive the get because we do not say Gito V'yado Ba'im Ke'echad. And Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar will be the author of that position in our Mishnah and says that Shtar works. Ayidei Acharim, Aval Lo Ayidei Atzmo. Mishalosh Machlokot Badavar. And there is a three-way Machloket over here. Now, the fact that there's a three-way Machloket over here is not as obvious as it would seem, because now we have three opinions technically. You have Rabbi Meir, you have the Chachamim, and you have Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So that's the way that you could suggest that there are three different opinions over here. Rashi explains the three opinions, and then brings a rejection of another approach. The things that drive Rashi in this direction have been, we'll see. One of them is af, the word af. Af b'shtar yedei acharim leyedei atzmo. That word af means that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar seems to hold this both by kesef and by shtar. Because he's saying, af bashtar, also bashtar, also to what? Also shtar means that kesef is this way, and shtar is also this way. What does that mean? That means that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, in both instances, whether it's kesef or whether it is shtar, he believes that a third party, a chirim, can do it for you. Ayidei Atzmo, you cannot do it. That means that when it comes to the case of Kesef, Ayudei Atzmo doesn't work because he holds like Rabbi Meir. That evidence has no independent ownership. So therefore you can't do it, Ayudei Atzmo. Ayudei Chaim works because he holds like the Chachamim that it's Zchut Hulo. By Shtar, he holds, again, Zchut Hulo, so Achirim can do it, can accept the Shtar and Shichur on his behalf. Ayudei Atzmo, you can't do it because Ein Gito B'Yado Ba'im Kechat. That would be the Shita of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Meir's Shita we already clarified. Rabbi Meir's Shita was, and we'll do this in the Shita of Rova, but then the seven is that Kesef can work Ayudei Achirim because he's not a party to it. It's Zadon who's selling him, and therefore it doesn't matter what he thinks. Ayudei Atzmo, he can't do it because Rabbi Meir believes you cannot have any independent ownership. By Shtar, Rabbi Meir says that Ayudei Achirim doesn't work because it's not a zchut for him. And you can't do it as we have. Ayudei Atzmo works because Gito V'Yado Ba'im Kechad. So that'll be the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim Shita is that when it comes to Kesef, it works Ben Ayudei Atzmo, Ben Ayudei Achirim. Ayudei Atzmo works because he has a certain amount of independent ownership. He can have some independent ownership. Ayudei Achirim, it works is because Zechut Ulo. It's a benefit to him. When it comes to Shtar, the Chachamim believe that he can do it both Ayudei Atzmo and Ayudei Achirim. Ayudei Atzmo because Gito V'Yado Ba'im Kechat. Ayudei Achirim because it is a Zechutu for him. So if someone else accepts it on his behalf, that's great. So those will be the three different opinions according to this. You have Rabbi Meir. Again, we'll go through it just for clarification. For Rabbi Meir, by Kesef, it works Ayudei Achirim, not Ayudei Atzmo. By Shtar, it's the opposite. It works Ayudei Atzmo, not Ayudei Achirim. For the Chachamim, it works Ben Ayudei Atzmo, Ben Ayudei Achirim, both Bekesef and Beshtar. In both those cases, it works. Rabbi Shimon and Elazar says that both the cases, it works Ayudei Achirim, not Ayudei Atzmo. Alright, so now, the problem with this pshat is, who's the author of our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, Rabbi Meir's opinion, we know. But then after that, it brings the Chachamim's position. The Chachamim's position, according to our Mishnah, is, listen to the reading of the Mishnah, and you have to tell me who this is. It says, V'chamim omrim b'kesef ayudei atzmo. So there we said, af ayudei atzmo. That means by kesef, it can be done both by him and by achirim. Who's that like? That's like the chachamim. The chachamim are the only ones with the position that say, by kesef, you can do it both ayudei atzmo and ayudei achirim. Ubishtar. What's the case of shtar? Ayudei achirim. Only by achirim, not by atzmo. Whose position is that? That's certainly not the chachamim's position. It's not Rabbi Meir's position. It's Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So that's what Rashi says in the end. The Mishnah is actually made up of three Tanaim. There's Rabbi Meir's position. The first statement in the Sefer of the Mishnah of the Chachamim is Chachamim Chachamim. The last statement of the Mishnah is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar's position. That is the difficulty in the Mishnah. There are other Rishonim who suggest that the Rabbanan and Rabbi Meir have the same position, which is, as we said before, which is Rabbi Meir believes by Kesef, Ayudei Achirim works, Ayudei Atzmo does not work. And Shtar works Ayudei Atzmo, but not Ayudei Achirim. The Chachamim believe, Ben Ayudei Atzmo, Ben Ayudei Achirim, it works by Kesef and by Shtar. Shimon ben Elazar's opinion is the following, that B'Shtar Ayudei Achirim Ayudei Atzmo. By Shtar, it can be done by others, not by himself, because he holds it's a Zchut Ulo, but he doesn't have Gito V'Yado Ba'im Kechad. But by the time of Kesef, Ben Ayudei Atzmo, Ben Ayudei Achirim, it works. Who's the author of our Mishnah now? Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar can be the author of our Mishnah. If you explain it that way, then Rabbi Shimon Elazar's position matches up exactly with the Mishnah. We rejected that because of the word af. Tosafot supports Rashi's position, both because of the word af over here, which indicates that Rabbi Shimon Elazar's position is both by Shtar and by Kesef, it's only Ayudei Achirim. He says, even if you don't have the girsa of af, we find that the Chachamim argue on Rabbi Shimon Elazar. It shows if they argue on Rabbi Shimon Elazar, we know that they believe Gito V'Yado Ba'im Kechad. That means that they are different than Rabbi Shimon and Elazar. That means that there are three different parties here. The other possibility, which Rashi entertains at the end and says that he thinks it's completely wrong and it doesn't work, is to say this. That Bonan's position is the following. That Kesef Ayudei Atzmo and Ayudei Achirim. B'Shtar Ayudei Achirim v'Ayudei Atzmo. And the Rabbanon will be the authors of our Mishnah, which is that the Reisha and the Seifa or the Rabbanan's position, which is by Kesef Ayidei Atzmo Ve'Ayidei Acherim. And in the Sefer that says Ayidei Acherim, yes, Ayidei Atzmo, no, that is the position of the Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon Elazar Savar Ki Rabbi Meir BeKesef. He holds like Rabbi Meir BeKesef, which means Ayidei Atzmo, it doesn't work, but Ayidei Acherim, it does work. And he holds like the Rabbanan by Shtar, that Ayidei Acherim, it does work, but Ayidei Atzmo, it doesn't work. That Gitov Yado Vayim Kechad is not applicable to the Shita of the Chachamim. The problem with that is, and as Rashi notes over here, is then who is of the position? We just said here, Kaimalon. We practice every day the Gitov Yado Vayim Kechad, that he's able to acquire the Shtar on his own. That means that the Chachamim don't think that's true. Rabbi Shimon Elazar doesn't think that's true. The only one who thinks that's true is Rabbi Meir. That means we're paskening like a dat yachid that Gitov Yado Vayim Kechad. For that reason, Rashi says that cannot be. Nobody would think that. And therefore, it must be that the Chachamim believe by Shtar, it's Ben Ayyadei Atzmo, Ben Ayyadei Acherim. And that's why Rashi explained the Machloket in the way that we did, and explains the Mishnah as being authored by three different parties. Instead of making the Seifa of the Mishnah all the Shita of the Chachamim, and say Rabbi Shimon Elazar holds like Rabbi Meir with regards to Kesef, and like the Chachamim with regards to Shtar, and that would have been all pretty, because then the Mishnah would have really been the Shita of the Chachamim and the Seifa. He doesn't want to say that because then you've relegated Gitov Yado Ba'im Kechad to an opinion of Rabbi Meir only. And that means they have a Shita Yachid that we're paskening like in Gitov Yado Ba'im Kechad. Therefore Rashi favors the explanation that the Rabbanan agree that Gitov Yado Ba'im Kechad. That means that the Rabbanan believe both by Kesef and by Shtar, Ben Ayyadei Atzmo, Ben Ayyadei Acherim works. And that means Rabbi Shimon Elazar disagrees by Shtar. And that means that we have now the authorship of our Mishnah. Rabbi Meir is the Reisha. The middle case is the Rabbanan, and the Shtar case is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. All right, my time with Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. What's the reason behind Rabbi Shimon Elazar's position? Gamar la Misha. He learns out the Gzer Shavah, which we've seen numerous times between Eved Kanani and Isha. La, and that's how we learned out Shtar by Isha. That's how we learned out a lot of halachot between them. My Isha, Shiotzi Get, the Rishut She'ena Shelo. Just like the work of the Get. A bill of divorce only works if it leaves the husband's possession. It's got to leave the husband's possession and go into someone else's possession. That someone else could be the woman, his wife. Af Eved Nami Yatziyotzi Get the Rishut She'ena Shelo. So too, by a Get Shichrur, it's got to leave the possession of the Adom. And handing it over to the slave is like the Adom passing it from his left hand to his right hand. It doesn't work because he doesn't have the sheet of Gitov Yado Ba'im Kechad. If he had Gitov Yado Ba'im Kechad, then it would work because in that case you would be giving it to a third party because he becomes a third party. He becomes an independent ownership simultaneously. But since he doesn't have that Savara, he says, just like by the woman, it's got to leave the husband's hand and get to the woman. So over here, it's got to leave the Adon's hand and get to someone else. Someone else got to be really someone else. Can't be the Adon's left hand to his right hand, which the slave in essence is his other hand. And so therefore you need to get it to a third person. That's the sheet of Rabbi Shimon Elazar. By Rabbo, the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. According to Rabbi Shimon Elazar, Eved Knani, Mashu Yaseh Shliach, the Kabel Gito Miyad Rabo. Can he make an agent to accept his get from his master? Now, Rashi over here brings a one possibility. Tosafot brings a second possibility as to what the answer is. I'll propose a third possibility, which I didn't see in the Rishonim, but I think could be equally plausible here. The way that Rashi learns it simply is, can he make a shliach, or can he not make a shliach? When he makes a third party an agent to accept the get on his behalf, is he able to create agency? That's the question here. Is he able to create agency or is he not able to create agency? That's one possibility as to what the question is does he have the ability to create agency or doesn't have the ability to create agency? Whereas Tosfot brings the second possibility is V'yesh Mefarshim. Does Rabbi Shimon Elazar require Shlichut? Because he learns out from Isha, La Misha, which means that just like a woman can establish a shliach de Kabbalah, so too the Eved has to establish a shliach de Kabbalah. If that's the case, then the Eved is really a party to this situation when he establishes agency with this individual. That means that he could also pull the agency and he has a say in the matter whether this guy accepts the get on his behalf or not. Or, do we say that Rabbi Shimon Elazar doesn't mean literally like an Isha? That just like the Isha has to appoint a shliach de Kabbalah, so too the Eved has to make appoint a shliach de Kabbalah. No, what he's saying is that, in essence, happens automatically. He doesn't have to appoint the shliach. That, by definition, the acherim are automatically an extension of him or on his behalf. And therefore, they accept it, and he has no say in the matter. It's going to work, whether he wants it or not, because he's not the controller of the agency. The agency happens whether or not he wants it or not. That's one way to phrase the question. Or the other way to phrase the question, which was what Rashi suggested also, like what Tosfos suggests over here, the question is, does his agency make the situation worse or better? When he tells a third party to accept on his behalf, Mihani Kabbalato or not, does that help? Why? Because he says, mean that we know that Rabbi Shimon Lozer believes that if a third party accepts the get on his behalf, it works. So why now, when the Eved makes him into an agent, does it make it worse? The answer is, that's exactly the problem. Maybe we would have thought that if he's not involved at all, then it's great, and it works on his behalf. If he points the guy's agent, it might make it worse, because then he's basically becoming an agent to the slave, and the slave is owned by the Adon, and then the agent now becomes an extension of the Adon, and it won't work. He makes the situation worse by pointing him as a shliach. That's the two ways that the question is phrased here. I would give a third alternative about how to explain it, which is similar to we've had before, which is, can the Adon make the Eved himself a shliach to accept his own get? Can he make him a agent to accept it on behalf of himself? We've seen something like that by the Isha as well, where the husband can make her a shliach beholacha, or make her into a shliach to accept on her own behalf. That you can't have the woman function in both positions, which is she can both be a shliach and she can be the recipient in the end. So it's over here. Maybe the Adon, this is what I phrase the question, maybe the Adon, can the Adon make him into a shliach to accept his own get? Which means that the Adon is giving him a certain amount of independence as an agent to accept it on his behalf. Can the Adon grant him that right? And that is the question according to Rabbi Shimon Elazar. So those are three different ways to phrase the question over here. And the question is this: Kamen de gamar la la misha di isha. Since he has a gzeir shava la la misha, he's like a woman. Odelma isha di matzi mikabelet gita shliach nami matzi mishavyo. Or maybe it's because a woman can accept her get for herself, she also can therefore make an agency. Meaning that whether that means she can create agency on the outside, according to the two pshatim that we saw in Tosafot, which is that she's able to create agency, or agency is not to her detriment. On the other hand, Eved, do you know Mikabel Gite? The Eved that cannot accept a get on his own behalf, Shliach Nami Lo Matzi Mishave. You can also not make a Shliach. Or the way that I'm saying it is that if he can't accept it himself, means that the Adon can't make him an agent to accept for himself, because he's not Shayach to the world of Gitin. You can only be an agent. You can only make agency when you have relevance within the area of Halacha. If you don't have relevance within that area of Halacha, you can't be a Shliach. That's why a goy can't be shliach for kiddushin or gitin, because they're not shayach in the parsha of gitin and kiddushin. So therefore, it can't be shliach. So here, since he can't be accepted himself, that means that he's not relevant in this topic, and therefore he can't make either himself, the Adon can't make him into a shliach, or he can't appoint shlichim over here. Bater de baya hadar pashto. After he asked the question, he resolved it. La misha. Learns the gzer shav misha ki isha, just like a woman. Which means now, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, even though the Eved cannot accept it on his own behalf, he can't appoint an agent to accept it on his behalf. According to the first Lashon and Tosavot, that would not be to his detriment. Meaning that it wouldn't ruin it, and he could get it that way. According to the second Lashon and Tosavot, it means that the agency is what allows him to accept the get. It means that the Eved could reject it if he wants. He could say, no, I don't want him to act as my agent. Vilha Adama Ravuna, brother of Yeshua, Hane Kane Shluchei Derachmona Ninu. Wait a minute. Then what are you going to do with this statement of the Amora, Rav Huna ben Yehuda Yeshua, who says that Kohanim must be agents of God? Because if you believe that the Kohanim are our agents, how could it be there's something that you yourself can't do, but you can point an agent to do on your behalf? Agency assumes that you have relevance here. And if you're relevant, then you can make an agent do it on your behalf. But if you're not relevant over here, then how can you make an agent do it on your behalf? So Rav Huna ben Yehuda says, Kohanim must be agents of God, because if they were our agents, we can't go into the Mikdash and do avodah in the Mikdash. So then how can we send a Kohen to do it on our behalf? Because he can't be our agent if we can't do it ourselves. So what is it? They're acting on God's behalf. And since God sent them, that's why they do the avodah, but they're not our agents. That's what Rav Huna ben Yehuda says, because he says we never find a case where a party is not relevant and can create agency. My says, below, Vaha Avdo. You just came up with a case where it's true by an Eved. Diyu lo matzi mikabel gite v'shliach matzi mishave. He can't accept his own document emancipation, but yet he can appoint an agent to do it on his behalf. So now you find agency, even though you can't do it. Now, Gemara answers somewhere along the lines of what you're suggesting. Below he, Israel lo shaykhi b'torat ha-kavarnot klal. Israel has nothing to do with korbanot. There is no way that he could be there. It's not a lack of training. It's not that if he does this and this and jumps through these hoops that he can do it. He is not allowed to do it. He will never be involved with the korbanot. Eved shayach b'gitin. Eved has relevance by the gitin, meaning that if he gets a get, if he gets a document of emancipation, then he will be free. The only question here is the vehicle by which he gets that document of emancipation. It's not like it's not relevant to him. It is relevant. He can be freed through a document of emancipation. Just a question of the vehicle by which it can be done. So he's relevant to that world. It's just right now there's some impediment that doesn't allow him to do it, which is that his ownership is equated with the Zadon's ownership. But if he is able to somehow get some form of independence, then it would work. Titania. Nirin da'advarim she'eved mekabel gito shel chaveiro miyad rabo shel chaveiro. What's an example of that where he can gain some independence? Is, for instance, you have two avadim that are owned by two different owners. Owner A with Eved A, owner B with Eved B. Owner A goes ahead and gives a document of emancipation not to his Eved A, but to Eved B. In that case, it works. Avalo miyad rabo shelo. He can't take it from his own master, but he can take it from someone else's master. That means that he is relevant in the world of Gitin and of documents of emancipation. The only impediment here is that his master's ownership over him doesn't allow he himself to accept it in this particular circumstance. But that doesn't mean in other circumstances where his ownership is independent enough to allow this to happen. For instance, if he accepts it on behalf of his friend, the Eved, then it works. And so therefore, that's why over here he can generate a shliach. We're separating between the two issues and saying, do you have any relevance to the topic or you have no relevance whatsoever to the topic? In the case of Eved, he has relevance to a document emancipation. There's just a technical impediment in this case that he's owned by this Adon. And therefore, the Adon can't give it to him because it's passing from his left hand to his right hand. Now then, if he has some independence, like if it's another Adon giving it on behalf of the other Adon slave, Adon B for the Eved B, he can hand it to Eved A and it works. So therefore, he can create shlichut. On the other hand, by Kohanim, Israel have no shaychot by the Karbanot. They can't ever get involved with that. They have no relevance whatsoever. In that case, they cannot make a shliach in order to do the avodah. That means that the Kohanim must be shluchei derachmano. They must be agents of God. Tosafot raises here, we saw this back in Nidorim as well when we spoke about it there, that Tosafot says, the Gemara in Nidorim asked the question, Hanei Kohanim, shluchei didan or shluchei derachmano? Are the Kohanim our agents or the agents of God? The Gemara there is inconclusive. The Gemara doesn't have an answer. Tosafot over there asks it over here as well. Why don't they bring our Gemara? Our Gemara has Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua and gives an answer and says the answer is Shluchei D'Rachmaninu because otherwise it wouldn't work. We can't do it. We can't create Shlichim. How come the Gemara in the Darim never brings this memra of Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua? So Tosafot gives a number of answers similar to what he said in the Darim. One of which is that many times the Gemara in search of an answer is looking for a Tanaic answer, not an Amoraic answer. The problem over here is that Rabbi Yeshua is an Amora. The Gemara wants a Mishnah and a Braita and is looking for a Mishnah and Braita as a proof, and in the Darim it never finds it. That's why it leaves it inconclusive. That doesn't mean that in the end we don't pass them like Rabbi Huna b'Rei Yeshua. It's just simply that's not what they were looking for. They were searching for a Tanaic proof. They couldn't find it. They left it inconclusive. Over here we have an Amoraic conclusion, which is Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says, done, that it is Shluchei D'Rachmano Ninhu. Right, that's number one way that Tosafot deals with it. The second way that Tosafot deals with it is, Inami Yesh Lamar D'Ochi Kami Bailei, Hane Kane Shluchei D'Rachmano Dafka Ninhu, V'lo Shluchei D'Dan Klau, Odom Ava Nami Shluchei D'Dan. The question over there in the Gemara Nedarim is not similar to the question over here. The question over here that's being answered, are they Shluchei D'Rachmano or Shluchei D'Dan? Rav Huna b'Rei Rav Yeshua says clearly they are Shluchei D'Rachmano, otherwise it wouldn't work. Because you can't create agency for someone who can't do it themselves. The Gemara Nedarim was asking a separate question, which is, when they are Shluchei D'Rachmano, are they exclusively Shluchei D'Rachmano? Are they only Shluchei D'Rachmano or are they Shluchei D'Rachmano plus Shluchei D'Dan? Do they have an aspect of us in them? The nafkamina there, which is important, is if you're mudar hana'ah. The person took a neder hana'ah from, again, any benefit from this kohen, can the kohen do the korbanot on his behalf? If they are solely shluchei d'rachmana, they're only agents of God, then of course they can do it because they have no involvement with you as a person. They're working for God, not for you. On the other hand, if we believe that they are shluchei d'rachmana and they are also shluchei didan, we're not in the avoda particular, they're acting as our shluchim because they are their shluchim of God. And the fact that they're processing the korban on your behalf makes them a shliach of you, that you ask for this kohen or specify this kohen. Then in that case, they're acting also as shluchei didan. If you took a neder anah, you would not be able to have them work on your behalf. Those are the two ways that Tosafot brings in order to reconcile between the Gemara and the Nedarim. And here, others suggest that the Gemara and the Nedarim is being made a case of shchita, a case of avoda where Israel is shayach. And therefore the question is relevant, because Israel can do shchita. Then the question is, when the Kohen does the shchita, is he doing that on b'shulchei d'rachmano or shulchei didan? And Rabbi Huna, Rabbi Yeshua's answer is not relevant over there, because shchita Israel is relevant too. And that's why over there they don't bring Rabbi Huna to Rabbi Yeshua. Or you could explain that the Gemara in Nedarim is speaking about a case where both parties are Kohanim. And therefore, this reasoning of Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rabbi Yeshua doesn't apply there. Because if the Baalim are Kohanim, they could do the Avoda themselves. And then the question is relevant, irrespective of the conclusion here of Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rabbi Yeshua. The last possibility brought by the Rishonim as to differentiate is because, in the case of when we say that you're Mudar Hana'ah from someone, for instance, person is Mudar Hana'ah from the Baal Tokeya on Rosh Hashanah. He's allowed to listen to the Tkiyot on Rosh Hashanah because mitzvot lav lehenot ninu. When you do a mitzvah, there's no Hana'ah involved. So mitzvot lav lehenot ninu says I can benefit from the mitzvah of this particular individual. But that is only true where the mitzvah that is being done is not in any way an action on my behalf. It's not done for me, it's done for the mitzvah itself. Other than by korbanot, it's clear that the kohanim are still doing something on your behalf. You're a beneficiary of their bringing the korban that you gain kapara, so you are a direct beneficiary of that action. So those cases, maybe we would not say that their being shluchei d'rachmana suffices. They might still be, in some sense, shluchei didan, because of that benefit that you derive from it, and therefore the principle of mitzvah lav lehenot nitnu would not be applicable in that case. So that would also be a way to explain why the Gemara in Nedarim didn't bring this answer of Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rabbi Yeshua, because it's not relevant over there. It's a totally different question. It's not a question of whether they are shluchei d'rachmana or shluchei didan. They're clearly shluchei d'rachmana. But even in function of shluchei d'rachmana, maybe you still can't utilize them because even though you say mitzvah lav le'anot nidnu, that's when there's no direct benefit to you. But over here, where there's direct benefit, we would not say that. Now, the Gemara says, ubilvad, quoting from the Mishnah, as long as the money belongs to someone else. So that's what the Chachamim said, that kesef ayidei atzmo, uvshtar ayidei acherim, uvajei kesef mishal acherim. That even when it's kesef, his own kesef, when he does it ayidei atzmo with kesef, it still has to be that the money belongs to a third party. So what does that mean? That's what the Gemara is going to say here. Neima b'haka miflegei. This is the machlok between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. The Rabbi Meir savar in kinyan le'avid below rabo, that the Eved has no independent ownership of his master, and a woman has no independent ownership from her husband. Rabbanan Sabre, Yesh Kinyan Eved below Rabbo, that he can't have ownership independent of his master, Yesh Kinyan Lisha below Bala, and a woman can have independent ownership away from her husband. So that would be the machlokit here is, can they generate a certain amount of independent ownership here or not? Amar Rabba, Amar Rav Sheshet, no. The Kuli Amma, En kinyan le'eved below rabo, an eved has no independent ownership of his master, ve'en kinyan le'isha below ba'ala, and a woman has no independent ownership of her husband. Ba'ocho b'mayeskinan. Over here, what are we doing with? The akne le'i permaneh. Someone hands him the money, v'amar le'i amanat she'en the rabcha rishut bo. And he says that your master has no rights here. So over here, he's making it tonight. There's a question before where the guy hands it to the eved, or he hands it to the isha, and we're saying, okay, that was their machloket. Can he own it independently of his master or not? So that would be the machloket. Gemara says that's not case, because everybody agrees that if you don't say anything, you just hand something to the Eved, or you hand something to the Isha, it by definition will go to his master or to the Baal. So here, the machloket is about when you specify. You have a tznai, you have a condition built in. See, I'm giving it to you on condition that your master has no rights in it. Rabbi Meir Savar, Kiamalek Nei, when he tells him to take possession of it, Kani Eved, the Kani Rabbe. The Eved acquires it and automatically his master gets possession of it. V'chi amar le almanat, lav klum ka amar le. And then the Tanai is meaningless because once he takes possession of it, The Tanai can't unwind what is already done, which is that the master owns it already. Chamin believe, no, that the Tanai governs the Maaseh, and therefore the condition makes it that the master does not have ownership over here. Rabbi Lazar Amar, Rabbi Lazar says, Koki ay gavno, tukuli ama lo plige. In that case, everybody would agree, dekani evid, bekani rabbi. When the evid accepts it and takes the acquisition of it, so does his master. The Tanai fails over here. The question of why the Tanai fails over here, why can't you say this like any other transaction where the Tanai doesn't fail? The one answer might be because you already did the maaseh. You give it to the evid, and then you say to him, almanat. So that's not going to work, because you already did the maaseh. You can't have the Tanai unwind an action that you've already done. That's one possibility. The other possibility is based on what we saw in the Tosafot in Gittin, where he says that your Tanai maaseh can't be bedavar echad. What does that mean? He means that it must be consistent, it can't be contradictory. Tosafot back there said that if the Tanai contradicts the maaseh, the Tanai is batel. According to Tosafot, even if you said the Tanai before you gave him the money, it's problematic, because the Tanai is contradictory with the maaseh. It's not a qualifying statement, but rather, it's a contradictory statement, which says, I'm giving you the money, but your master has no ownership in it. Well, if you give him the money, his master does have ownership, and if you're saying it doesn't have ownership, then the Tanai contradicts, and the Tanai falls away. The other possibility is that it's matneo mashakotu b'Torah. You may get Tanai against what the Torah says. Torah says that mashakon evid kana rabo. You can't make a Tanai against the Torah. So one of those three reasons, the Rishonim say here that the Tanai fails. When the Tanai fails, that means the maaseh, the action, goes through. If the action goes through, the evid doesn't have anything, and that's why he can't acquire on his own behalf. There's no longer kesef ayidei achirim. So then what's the difference between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim? Someone else gave him money. On condition that you go free with it, which is Rabbi Meir Savar Kamalei Kenei. He tells him to take acquisition of it. Kani Evid and Kani Rabbi. The same problem as we had before. The Kenyan goes through, and the Tanai is meaningless. Does the Almanat? It doesn't work. On the other hand, Rabbanan Savre Vididei Nami Alo Kamaknilei. He's not even giving it to the Eved. Because he's saying it's only if you go out to freedom with it. Or in essence, when you have a directed purpose for the money, if you're giving the Eved a general gift and say your master has no ownership in it, it doesn't work. But if you give the money for a specified purpose, that specified purpose can govern the gift. And in this case, you'll avoid all the problems that we mentioned before. Before we said, oh, it's matna mashakadu b'Torah, because mashakana evin kana rabo. Then if you give him the money in order to do is for him to obtain his freedom, then in essence, you're not contradicting the Torah. Because you're saying you want the money to go toward his freedom, not to his rav, or to his adon. Meaning that you're not trying to, that if evin is kone, something his rav is not kone, you're saying, yeah, mashakana evin kana rabo, but I don't want this evin to be an evin anymore. I'm using this money to free him, so it's not matnash malkotu b'Torah. Or, like we said before, with Tosfot, where you say you can't make contradictory statements that undermine the maaseh. But here you're not doing that. Because your maaseh is what is freeing him. You're only giving the money to free him, and therefore they're in sync now. They're in coordination. Your Tanai and the money are doing the same thing, which is trying to free him. Or, again, where we said that when you have a maaseh, you can't have the almanat come and undermine the maaseh. Over here, you're not having the almanat come and undermine the maaseh because the whole maaseh was to free him. And when you're trying to free him, then you're not undermining it, you're enhancing your action to say that this is the purpose of the money. So we're going to stop here with the machloket here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. There's a massive Tosfot over here about who to pass the mic over here. So Meir Rabbeinu Tam, Rabbeinu Tam says, the halacha ki Rabbi Meir. That the halacha here is like Rabbi Meir, the ein kinyan le'evi below rabo. That a slave can never have any independent ownership from his master. Bein kinyan isha below bala. And the same thing is true of a woman. Baliba de Rabbi Sheshet. And it's according to Rabbi Sheshet, the muki blukta kimakni le'acher, from le'a manat shein racha reshut bo. But it's only according to Rabbi Sheshet's explanation of Rabbi Meir, which is that if you say almanat that your master has no rights here, doesn't work. Demashma aval imamar le'a manat. If you use the Lashon of Rabbi Elazar, even Rabbi Meir would agree that it works and the Tanai works. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says is that we paskin here, like Rabbi Meir, alibid the Rabbi Sheshet. Which means that when you simply say that, give him the money and say you're with the condition that your master has no ownership here, does not work. If you specify what you want him to do with it, meaning that I want this money to go to you on condition it makes you free, that would work even according to Rabbi Meir. Because Rabbi Meir only says it doesn't work when you say your master has no rights here. But if you specify the action, it works. And then Rabbeinu Tam goes on to bring proof after proof from Shas that that's the case. That number one, we pass in like Rabbi Meir. And number two is only according to Lashon of Rav Sheshet. One of his biggest proofs has to do with a machlok between Rav and Shmuel, where a father-in-law had taken a neder hana'ah not to benefit his son-in-law, or the son-in-law took a neder that he didn't want his father-in-law to give him benefit. And now the father-in-law wants to gift something to his daughter. Can he gift it to his daughter or not? Over there we have a machlok at Rav and Shmuel, and it says there that Rav believes that it only works if you say to her, El damar la masha at no seit no tenet la toch pich. That only time it works is if you tell her that this money is for you, to use for your own purposes, to use yourself. Avali amar la shetirtzi tasi. If he says to her, do whatever you want with it, doesn't work, and it would go to her husband automatically. It's only where he specifies the purpose of the money does it remain independent, which is exactly like Rabbi Meir, according to Rav Sheshet, which is that only when you specify the purpose does it work, but if you don't specify the purpose, it goes to the Isha. That's his biggest proof, and he says, Allahu kirab bi surah against Shmuel, and therefore, there the Gemara says that that machloket is alibid the Rabbi Meir. And so then he freaks it out. Well, alibid the Rabbi Meir to who? It's alibid the Rabbi Meir according to Rav Sheshet here, and that's why it works. And he brings proof after proof after proof. The Re, in the end, says that he thinks the Rabbeinu Tam is wrong, and the main reason the Rabbeinu Tam is wrong is because there is a difference between an Isha and an Eved. Here the Gemara draws a broad equation. It says, just like Ein Kinyan Eved, independent of his Rav, so too, there's no independent Kinyan for an Isha, mi Ba'ala. But the Re points out is that they're not identical. They're not the same. When it comes to the statement that there's no Kinyan for an Eved, independent of his Rav, that means, period, that the Eved has no ownership independence of his master, and he can't own anything. Doesn't matter what you do, he can't own anything. On the other hand, when you talk about a woman, even when we say anything, mashakana isha kana bala, that's only the payrot. That means if a woman gains something or finds something, she gets to keep the keren, the payrot belongs to the husband. But that means it's a very different type of ownership. That means that a woman does have independent ownership of her husband. She just doesn't have independent ownership to get the benefits of whatever keren she owns. The production of that asset will belong to the husband. But the asset itself will belong to the woman. And therefore we force him to buy property, and then he can get the benefit of the produce of that property, but the property belongs to the woman. And therefore a woman does have independent ownership aside from her husband. If that's the case, then I can answer all the questions that Rabbeinu Tam asks. And what the Re says is, we pass like Rabbi Elazar. That by Rabbi Elazar who says that no matter what you say, it doesn't work. Doesn't matter if you say, Almanat, that your Rav has nothing here, or whether you say, Almanat, for your freedom. Doesn't work. Period. What about the Gemara Nidarim that Rav says that if you give it to the daughter, and you say, Masha'at, no seit, no ten of the pich, it works? That's because it's a woman. A woman and a slave have two different issues. By the slave, where he has zero independent ownership, doesn't matter what snai you put in place, it doesn't work. By the Isha, since she does have a certain amount of independent ownership, then you can enhance that ownership if you specify the purpose. And that's what it means, that over there, where you gift the property, the father-in-law gifts the property to his daughter, and says that this is for you to use to feed yourself and to take care of yourself, then he specifies the purpose. Since she has ownership of the Karen anyway, even independent of her husband, now you can extend that to the payroll through the Tanai. But the Eved has no independent ownership, and therefore you can't say that. And because of that, we'll differentiate between the two different scenarios and say, Mashakana Isha, Kana Bala is much more limited than Mashakana Eved, Kana Rabo. And therefore you'll have a difference in the din. When it comes to an Eved, you can never create independent ownership of the master, no matter what condition you put in place. For Paschal, like Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Elazar. Meir, according to Rabbi Elazar, says there's just no way to create that ownership. By an Isha, even Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir will agree, because an Isha is different. She has ownership independent of her husband to a point. That independent ownership allows you to expand it when you create a tnai there. And therefore, even though you're using the exact same lashon by an isha as by an eved, you'll come out with a different outcome. By the eved, it won't work. By the isha, it will work. And according to the Reed, that's the way he explains this, and disagrees with Rabbeinu Tam, who says that we're passing like Rabbi Meir according to Rabbi Sheshet. And the Reed says, no, we're passing according to Rabbi Meir according to Rabbi Elazar. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line of Chav Gimel Amud Bet.